Hello, you're listening to Career Conversations, a series that's part of the Table Talk podcast from Food Matters Live. I'm Alicia Roche, a chef and food journalist, and together we'll meet experts in cooking, mixology, the environment, psychology, branding, social media, and all sorts as we learn about the surprisingly varied roles that go way beyond the kitchen. My guest today is recent TV star, Chef Dominique Wolfe, who spoke to me fresh off of winning Jamie Oliver's Great Cookbook Challenge. Now, with her own debut cookbook about to launch, she spoke to me about how many years of hard work it's taken to get here, and she admits that she's been planning to make it in food for at least 5 or 6 years in her head. Dominique started off as a singer-songwriter and really loved it, but she felt everything finally clicked when she realised food was her true passion, so she's encouraging everyone else to try to find their joy in life. I'll be back at the end with some key info about getting into cookbooks and launching food products. But for now, settle in and enjoy the podcast. Obviously, you're an incredibly proficient cook and Thai cookery is your background. But when you order a takeaway, what do you order?
If I'm at home and we order a takeaway, it is always Indian, actually. We don't order many, but I wouldn't cook an Indian to that sort of level and I wouldn't cook the number of dishes. So potentially I would get an Indian takeaway, yeah.
Oh, you can't go wrong with an Indian takeaway. Delicious. You have just won one of TV's biggest cookery shows. I remember watching the trailer for this and Jamie saying, whoever wins this, it's going to absolutely change their lives.
Yeah.
Has it changed your life?
It definitely has. And I think we're only at the very, very beginning, I hope. It literally, winning a prize like this, ultimate validation. But it, you know, when he said that, actually, when he announced the prize, I think from a very physical perspective, I had 6 weeks of writing a book. So literally, I did nothing else. So my life definitely changed. And I'm just really looking forward to starting a new chapter of my career. You know, it's going to be something different, something I've always wanted to do. So yeah, very exciting times.
When you were on the show with Jamie, was it really long filming days?
Oh, yeah, it was, I think I woke up at 5, but that's partly because I need a little longer to get dressed in the mornings. Wake myself up, have a couple of cups of tea. I think we were picked up at 6:30 and then, you know, in the studio, or not in the studio, but on set sort of before 7, and then we'd be going home maybe 7. So it was pretty long days. I mean, a lot of it is sitting, waiting. You know, you're not cooking for 12 hours a day at all.
Thank God. Now, off the back of this show, you have got your exciting cookbook coming out in June. What's it called? And is this your first ever cookbook?
Yes, it's called Dominique's Kitchen, out on the 9th of June. One of the sort of provisos to go into this competition was that you'd never had a cookbook out, and I certainly haven't. It was something that had been bubbling for years and years and years. And actually, over the last few years, I've started going to workshops on food writing, going to lots of author events, meeting various people, Thomasina Myers, Diana Henry, all the people I've sort of gone to events to meet and learn and find out how they did it, what their inspirations were. It's just something I'm passionate about. So yeah, to sort of finally get the opportunity, it was pretty amazing.
And how much help do you have writing it? Because I imagine for most people, even just the writing of the recipes or the photography or any one part of it would feel overwhelming. Do you have a team helping you put it together?
There is definitely a team working on the book, without a doubt. And I was really lucky. I had Jamie's team helping me. Of course, I wrote the recipes. I had an editor who would check it, but thankfully there weren't that many changes made. But on the actual days of the shoot, that's when the team sort of came into their own. I was very lucky to work with his food team. So I think you were there before.
Yes, I started off with Jamie.
Yeah, amazing HQ. You know, I was lucky enough to have access to that. So that's where we shot it, very close to where I live. I had food stylists from his team work with me. So I would cook the food and I cooked 10, 11 dishes a day on the shoot, which was a lot. Goodness, I was like, when I saw the list, I was like, how on earth are we going to do this? And somehow we did. So I would cook the dish, the food stylist would style it, and there would be a photographer, because that isn't where my skill set is. And then I would carry on cooking and preparing the next dish. So we got into a rhythm. I had Jamie's art director, James, his editor-in-chief. And so there was a whole team who helped put the book together, plus obviously the team at Penguin as well. So it was an incredible process. And although I tested the majority of the recipes myself and farmed it out to people I knew, there were some recipes which I got a bit stuck with, and the food team were there to help and sort of give it another try and give some feedback where necessary.
You must have been learning a lot during this process. Have you got any hot tips for people who are listening thinking, I'd quite like to have a go at this? I might not have won a cookery show and I don't have Jamie Oliver's team, but what's a tip for someone who's got a dream cookbook project and they don't really know where to start, how to get an agent, what to do?
I mean, first of all, keep writing. I think practicing writing is really essential. A few years ago, I hadn't done any writing and I got a regular slot with a health and wellness site, a small health and wellness site, and they wanted a regular recipe. And that was great experience because the recipe that I first submitted to them with my own picture changed and improved over the months that I was doing it. It forced me to improve my skills. So without a doubt, get practice doing it. And I think now everyone can write their recipes and put them on Instagram. You know, read a lot of books. Look at the books that you like. What is it that you like about those cookery books? And for me, funnily, Jamie has been a massive inspiration because his recipes are so simple and accessible. For me, that's how I cook as a home cook. I just want to cut to the chase. I want to see the recipe there. And so that definitely influenced my style. And I mean, I use notebooks. I write everything I cook, I write down, or I try to write down, you know, whether it's a simple stir fry or whatever, just so I've got a note of that. It's practicing. Practicing makes perfect. And then I guess once you've got that idea, come up with a killer concept, you know, if you really are advanced in that, yes, you can approach agents. And I think, how would I do it if I hadn't won this competition? I mean, I think the competition's fierce. I think a lot of people have a big, big following, you know, tens of thousands. And that obviously helps if you have a big following and a great idea. Or if you have a really, really unique idea, that's something that hasn't been done before. That's also potentially going to be interesting to an agent.
You studied cookery. You went back in time to study again and went to Leith's Cookery School in London. What's Leith's all about for people who don't really know about it?
So Leith is where a lot of people in the food industry, from BBC Good Food writers and food writers in general, have been. So it's a really great place to learn. There are various courses, and the most intense one perhaps is the full-time diploma course. I have three kids and it's in West London. There was just no possibility I would be able to do that course. So they have a part-time version of that, which was something like two nights a week and then a Saturday every now and then. So it was still pretty intense. And I think since then they've launched the online course, so it's even easier to do this. And it goes through all the basics, you know, not quite boiling an egg, but certainly omelettes and scrambled eggs to pastry. And it immersed me in the industry, gave me some skills. And actually, one thing that was so useful in the Great Cookbook Challenge was things like a time plan. I wouldn't never have known to do a time plan before, but actually that helped me organize and keep my cool in, you know, as much as possible on a TV show cooking. So definitely it taught me skills. And you could potentially be a chef, but you don't need to end up as a chef to be there. You could end up doing food styling or food writing. There's quite a lot of different areas that you might end up going into. It opens up avenues, basically.
And so a time plan will literally be, you'll write down the whole process from beginning of end of what you're going to be cooking that day. Potatoes in at 9 o'clock, chicken goes in at 10, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and it really helped organise what I was doing. I am quite a messy chef at home, but on the show, I was able to keep a tidy station, which again just helps everything flow a lot smoother. So even though I can't do it at home, I did manage to do it on the programme.
Yeah, I had that drummed into me by Jamie Oliver. And when I was a young chef at his kitchen in East London, Gordon Ramsay came to visit and he came into the kitchen and saw how messy my workstation was. And he gave me a little tap on the hand and said, clean as you go, chef, clean as you go. So now I do. I know that you've talked a lot about how networking helped you. Before you came on the TV show, you had your own business, The Wolf's Kitchen, and it sort of took off during lockdown. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. So The Wolf's Kitchen is the food business I've had for about nearly 2 years, and it's sauces, nuts, pastes. I started it June 2020. I'd had the initial idea for a while. And in September 19, I was like, right, by December, I'm going to have my three sauces. I'm going to take them to Ali Pali Farmers Market near where I live and test the concept. And that's something, it's really important to test the concept out in the wide world. So a farmers market is the perfect place. I sold 250 bottles in 2 days, which is, you know, really good for a sauce.
Great.
I knew I was onto something. And at this point, I didn't have any branding. I had found a small manufacturer because for me, that wasn't something I was going to do. I rented a kitchen once for a day and realized no way is this going to be something I can do. So I found a small manufacturer and got that sorted out, then went away and worked on the branding. I had been on lots of courses and workshops to help inform that process. So I would certainly advise things like, there's a great food event called Bread and Jam, which is for food and drink producers. There's also a networking group, which is their Facebook group called the Food Hub. And that's really great as well, because it's got 12,000 people on there who are in the food, packaged food industry, whether they're entrepreneurs like me, or whether they got marketing or label service or whatever. So you can find out that information. And one other, for me, a great place is LinkedIn. It's where I hang out from a food business. It's where I hang out socially, because you just meet so many people and connect on there.
Yeah, I think a lot of young people think it's all about Instagram and TikTok. And of course it is for picking up followers, it is. But you can't beat LinkedIn for a bit of good old-fashioned networking.
Honestly, I only discovered it a few months in when someone said, oh, are you on LinkedIn? And I thought it was, I actually wondered what the point of LinkedIn was. I thought, oh, are you just on there with your CV? But it's totally a networking forum. And I have met so many people and had so many opportunities as a result of being on LinkedIn. And you've got to post, you know, a couple of times a week at least. You've got to engage. It's similar sort of rules, I think, of social media. But you can network and then network with buyers and fellow entrepreneurs. And I think, you know, you need to speak to your peers. I have a part of a network WhatsApp group, and so every day someone's asking a question, you have support, or can you like my reel, you know, there's all sorts of lots of different support that goes on, so you can't do it on your own.
No, what I really love about everything you're saying is you're showing people that it really is hard work and it is a long journey. This is something you were whirring around in your head for years before it actually came to fruition. You did a lot of networking. People, you know, it doesn't happen overnight. It really doesn't.
No.
And as I understand it, this WhatsApp group you've mentioned is also part of, like, you've helped set up some networking groups that particularly help women into the industry.
Yes, when I realised I wanted to get into food, I think my youngest was a year and a half or something, and I just couldn't, I knew there were lots of networking groups in central London, and I thought, there's no way I can go into central London, I want something on my doorstep. So I created a Facebook group. The idea was creative and entrepreneurial women. And so that started about 3 years ago, pre-COVID, a couple of meetings a month, you know, 20, 25 women come to each meeting, but there are over 600 members on the Facebook group now. And it's a really great forum for people to sort of say, someone posted today, I'm looking for a space to do a workshop. Any recommendations? It's not a sales group, it's a help and a supportive forum. And we've started having the meetings again since COVID, and it's just really great, honestly, the number of collaborations that have happened. And it's not specifically food, it's just any woman who's doing anything that's maybe not a traditional corporate 9-to-5. And I also set up a food one, a more specific food one, which is a smaller group. But again, I still have met people through that have either given me leads for new clients or whatever. So if you can't find a networking group, set one up.
You're someone who makes yourself busy. You're never not doing something to better yourself or the lives of others around you. You're busy, right?
Yeah. And I think the key thing is action. I mean, without a doubt, I talked about sources for quite a while. When I'd go to networking meetings, other networking meetings, and say, I'm going to launch a range of sources. And someone said, you've just got to do it. And as soon as I sort of realised, that's what I'm going to do. I stopped doing other stuff, which was perhaps taking my time, and I gave myself a deadline. And for me, that is so important. There's so many things in my life I don't give myself a deadline for. I'm going to clean out the shed. So that's been on my to-do list for about 4 years, but I haven't given myself an actual deadline or goals. And I think as soon as you do that, you make it real.
Let's go right back to the beginning. Before TV, before The Wolf's Kitchen, what did you originally study and where?
So I did A-levels and I did get a university place. Now, it's a long time ago, but I think it was King's College to do economics. But I was drawn in by music. So music was my first passion. I followed my passion and decided I'm not going to go to university. I'm going to get a job in sales, media sales, working very close to my house. And I gave up my place. Now, with hindsight, was that a good thing to do? Maybe not, but I'm here now. And I sort of try and be quite pragmatic about these things. So for quite a few years, I pursued music and I did media sales, then went into recruitment. So had a day job. And actually, those sales jobs have come into their own for my food business and hopefully for the food writing as well, because you need a lot of those traits when you have a food business. So I did media sales and recruitment for a while, eventually decided to give it up to focus on music full time. And for quite a few years, I gigged around London, you know, a couple of gigs a week. I even played at Glastonbury once a while ago.
Wow.
And, you know, did that for a while. And I think eventually I kind of fell out of love with it. It was never going to be the career I wanted, never going to be a sustainable career. You know, there's only a very, very small percentage of people that make a really good living from music and the kind of living I wanted to make. So by this point, I was in my mid-30s. So I was stalling having a family until, you know, I got a deal, and that never happened. So then I decided, right, I'm going to give up this dream. And it hurt a bit. It was like splitting up in a relationship. And then I had my family and three kids in quick succession. So there's only about 16 months between them. And, you know, then it got to the point where I...
felt a bit knackered. Bit knackered after three.
Just a little bit tired. Oh my God, yeah. You're slightly tired. But for a while I had this niggling feeling that I wanted to do something with my life. It was great being a stay-at-home mum, but it's not what I wanted to do with my life as such. And I didn't have a career to fall back on. I didn't want to go back to an office. I explored all sorts of things. I went on courses, workshops, looked at things, and then realised it was food. And that's always been my passion, probably bigger than music, really. And years ago, I never knew how it could be a career. So when I kind of had that moment, it was amazing. And I felt this relief, literally a sort of dark cloud had lifted when I found out what my purpose was going to be.
Was there a moment for you where you suddenly had a eureka moment?
There was a pre-light bulb moment, if you like. So I'd been thinking about what do I do with my life, and I was just pregnant with my third child at this point. And my aunt, Thai auntie, had been making these wonderful sauces and food, and she actually did this Thai sprinkle. They call it in Thailand Namprik Narok, which is a crunchy, sprinkly topping, basically, with onion, garlic and chilies. I'd never seen it here. And I actually went to this bread and jam festival, and I managed to get a pitching session, and I had Selfridges and some other sort of big company there. And I gave them a bit of this DIY stuff, and the feedback was great. But then I realized dried shrimp, which was a key component. It's not sustainable. It was never going to be a commercial enough product. And I didn't have enough information, combined with the fact that I was pregnant with a third child. So really, I just sort of parked that idea for a while. But I'd started the whole process of exploring food. And then fast forward a few years, and I almost discounted food for a bit. And then I sort of came in a full circle. And I thought, hang on a minute, the most fun I'm having in my life, obviously kids are great, but is in my kitchen concocting, you know, doing new recipes. Oh, it's food. And, you know, Auntie Deng had made this tamarind sauce, and it was so different to anything else I'd tried. So it was that product, that sort of realization, that sort of this full circle that it was staring me. You know, why had I discounted food? It really was it.
As well as the cookbook coming out, what's next for your food brand, The Wolf's Kitchen? You've branched out from sauces. I know you've got like little picky nibbly things as well. What might be next? Are you thinking maybe whole meals or...
At the moment, I'm going to whole fire just because of where I'm up to. But when I started it, it was never just about a sauce. The sauce to me was the gateway, you know. It could be meal kits. I think I'd steer away from fresh as in refrigerated products because of shelf life. That's quite scary. You know, it's hard enough with a 10-month shelf life on nuts, let alone a 3-day shelf life on a product. But it could be anything that's relevant to my sort of brand, which is... doesn't have to be Asian inspired, but I think obviously that's where I lean in terms of the food product. The nuts aren't, it could be definitely other snacking areas would be fun. Who doesn't love snacking?
It's me again. I loved how honest Dominique was about how many years it took her to become successful. It wasn't this overnight thing we all see on TV. Dominique is very much about mentoring and empowering others, and she had some great tips for budding entrepreneurs, and especially she wanted to champion women into the food and drinks industry. Her best advice was concentrate on your business with great focus, and don't worry if other things in your life aren't perfect or taking priority. She also says to make use of local networking groups on social media, just like her own one. Now, it will be difficult to follow Dominique's precise career path because she's just gone and won a great big TV show. But before that, she was a musician and then a food businesswoman. Starting off your own food business will require that great idea and some prototypes before you can take it out to the industry. So food markets are a really fantastic place to see if you've got a winning formula, just like Dominique did. Then the usual setup cost for a new food business is about £10,000. There are many grants and awards out there, including specialist startup bank loans, such as Virgin Startup, or have a look at HSBC. And I highly recommend a Facebook group called The Food Hub so that you can network with other startup food and drinks businesses from small to very big. As for writing a cookbook, it's no way as lucrative as you might think. A typical advance might be about £13,000 or £14,000, which sounds like loads, but it takes a full year at least to write one, so think about how committed you really are if you want to go ahead. If you've got a great idea, make sure it's easy for editors to understand the minute they first glance at it, and create a social media account so that there is a place to showcase your recipes and what you do. Thank you and good luck to Dominique as she launches her first cookbook. And thank you for listening. Until next time, goodbye.